This episode is proudly sponsored by The Helix, a new innovation district located in New Brunswick, New Jersey, the heart of the Northeast Corridor. The Helix provides a critical ecosystem for innovation by offering a range of physical environments, a vibrant community of leading innovators, and a strategic central location on the Northeast Corridor. The Helix will uniquely mix workspaces, classrooms, laboratories, venues, and collaborative environments, creating a dynamic community and setting for innovative minds. Universities, startups, Fortune 500 companies, entrepreneurs, researchers, and many others will all call the Helix home. Thus far, the Helix has assembled a community of innovative private and public organizations, such as Rutgers Health, the New Jersey Innovation Hub, RWJ Barnabas Health, Hackensack Meridian Health, universities from Ireland and Israel, and others. The Helix is where ideas will come to life. To learn more, visit helixnj.com.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
From NJ.com and the Star Ledger, welcome to the Rutgers Rant, your one-stop podcast for the Scarlet Knights, with your hosts, Steve Politti, and Rutgers insiders, Brian Fonseca and Pat Lenny. Let's start chopping.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Rutgers Rant. We're calling it an emergency edition, but it's really just a regularly scheduled a little earlier because of the big news today. Rutgers has a quarterback from the transfer portal. We've got a little, going to try this one, Kaliak Mania. Fonseca came up with that. I'm stealing it. Only he's pronouncing it. How would you like to pronounce Kaliak Mania, Brian? Go ahead.
So I'm not Greek, but if I was, I think it would be Kaliak Mania.
Oh, man, you sound Greek. That's good.
Chris Sakonis. I've had a gyro Kaliak recently. So maybe
that's what Kaliak Mania. Pass the chicken. What's it called? The souvlaki?
The tzatziki sauce.
This is great. All right. Ethan Kaliak Manis, new quarterback out of the transfer portal, Minnesota. All right. Let's just assume that people do not know who this new player is. Can one of you guys just give me the quick synopsis? What do we know about him? What can we expect from him? And maybe more importantly, why is he here from his perspective?
He's got a couple ties to Kirk Shiraka. Obviously, the Rutgers offensive coordinator, coached him for a year in Minnesota, recruited him. So that's obviously the glaring connection there. But also beyond that, he has ties to New Jersey. His dad is from Central Jersey, was a great high school athlete at Cedar Ridge, which is Old Bridge now. And his dad also wrestled at Seton Hall. So you get an early shout out on the podcast for wrestling. There you go. But from his perspective, I think his time in Minnesota was just up. He was looking for an opportunity to compete. And this is just an opportunity for that. So he'll get that opportunity to compete with Gavin Wimpson in spring, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, it looks like he's there's a lot of confusion about whether or not he'd be an upgrade over Gavin Wimpson. I mean, I've now had a chance to watch a little bit of him, and I think the answer to that is yes. Like, I think if you look into it from a pure passing perspective, Brian, that he is a more accurate passer with a higher upside and put into the right system, he'll be quite good.
I think the best system for him, too, is the one with Shiraka, because that was his best year so far. He had three offensive coordinators in 3 years at Minnesota. Sounds very familiar for people around these parts, yeah. Which, by the way, are we calling them the Rutgers Golden Knights, or are we calling them the Rutgers Scarlet Gophers? Because this entire roster is going to be made, and coaching staff is going to be made of former Minnesota people. Pretty soon, PJ Fleck is going to be out there coaching the wide receivers. Just don't be surprised when that happens. But anyway, his best year was under Shiraka. And I think I haven't spoken to him yet. I'm hoping to speak to him at some point soon. Is that connection, he's hopeful that he can rekindle that and return to the form he had at the end of the 2022 season, which I watched a lot of his games from that year to kind of get a glimpse of what it would look like. He had his best career game against Wisconsin, huge rivalry game on the road, threw for 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, looked awesome doing it. Had a great game in the Pinstripe Bowl against Syracuse until he had a lower leg injury to take him out. But he just really got better and better as he played under Shiraka. He did have some weapons. He had the Big Ten's leading rusher in Muhammad Abraham. He had a great tight end, which we'll get into later when we talk about transfer portal targets Rutgers needs to attack. He had some really good wide receivers, which maybe they hope Dymir Miller will be like that. All that combined, I think that that version of Kalik Manis is easily better than Gavin Wimsett. I know we talk about increased accuracy. Everybody in college football is more accurate than Gavin Wimsett. Among quarterbacks with at least 125 dropbacks, Gavin Wimsett had the lowest completion rate. Kalik Manis had the 13th lowest. If you go to adjusted, which accounts for drops, Minnesota's wide receivers dropped 25 passes last year. 25 passes. So if you account for adjusted completion rate, his was 8.5% better than Gavin's. That's a lot. So I think that, yes, going into the spring, going to this competition, on paper, Kalik Manis probably has the edge.
And it's more than just the completion rate too, Pat. I think it's what this offense is not doing. And I just get that sense that there are page upon page upon page. And we're not talking like the back pages of a playbook where all the fancy stuff is. I'm talking like over the middle throws. We're just talking about stuff that, you know, you're just not seeing from this offense because quite fairly, I think Greg Schiano recognized at a certain point that he was going to have to play conservatively and limit the mistakes from his quarterback. And that meant taking things out, which we're putting the ball in danger. And I just wonder what we haven't seen from the Shiraka offense because they were scared to death of an overthrow, of turning the ball over.
It's a really good point. I'm really intrigued to see that as well, because we've seen Shiraka have explosive offenses. We've seen him develop run first offenses. We've seen him mix it up here and there with both of those. So my end of the day philosophy on watching Shiraka's offense and understanding him as a play caller is always comes back to dealing with whatever personnel he has. And we know next year, of course, Kyle Manunga is going to be back. The running game is going to be just as good. So that's still going to be the focus. It's going to be that same, can we convert third and short and third and mediums? And that, to me, was what was really lacking on this throughout the season, was like, all right, we're ahead of the chains on first and second down, but we're not converting on third and medium. That's a huge problem. And we gave Rutgers a lot of praise when they sustained these long drives that ate up the clock. And I think that's really what plays ultimately best for Rutgers. If you're playing if you're a defensive oriented team, you play special teams well, you want these and an offense that can just chew clock, move the chains. I don't think it's going to ever be a quick striking offense in the Big Ten, but it could be one that complements its defense. And I think to do that, you have to have a quarterback that's accurate and be able to move the chains on third down.
Just to add to that, Rutgers ran the ball a lot this year, 60% of the time. Under Shiraka in 2022 with Kalik Manis and Muhammad Abraham, they ran the ball 66% of the time. Two out of every three plays was a run. I think that's probably more likely to be like that next year than to be they're less running, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah. Well, they were better teams, really. So they had some leads to protect as well. I mean, they ran the ball against Rutgers, even a higher percentage than that, I'm guessing, if I remember correctly.
You're saying might see more of that Indiana game script that we saw this year with 80% running the ball.
Right. Yes. But this time it would be Kyle Manungay running the ball 40 times and Kalik Manis running it 5 times, probably. They use him in the run game a lot less. I do think he's pretty efficient as a runner after looking into it, but I don't think they'll trust him to run the ball, if it is him, as often as they did Gavin Wimsett.
So are we looking at the two quarterback system? I mean, if you're watching the national semifinals, watching the Rose Bowl last night, Michigan ran two quarterbacks. I mean, not a lot, but certainly gave a kind of change of pace look in there a bunch of times. I mean, Rutgers has done it in the past. It wouldn't be the first time, sometimes out of necessity, but I wonder if that's where we're headed. If we're looking at it where this is going to be, we're going to play both quarterbacks, or we're going to, you know, if he's not going to come out and say in late August, you know, Ethan's the guy, or if we're looking at a situation where we're going to see two quarterbacks.
The nightmares of the 2022 season just sent a shudder down my spine. I've seen Johnny Langan come out as the starting quarterback against Boston College.
Three quarterbacks in the first three plays, right? With something like that.
Yes. I do think that I don't know if we're going to run it. I don't think it's going to be a two quarterback system, but I think if there is struggles from either quarterback, whoever wins the job, there's going to be less margin for error. You know, like Gavin Wimsett had a long leash to work with, right? Evan Simon was never really threatening to take the job. This way, I think if you have two quarterbacks of a similar level, there's a lot of pressure that if you don't play well, the next guy is right on the edge of coming in.
Do we, Pat, if you have to guess right now, will we have Gavin Wimsett on the on this roster to talk about next year? Do you think he makes it through spring ball? The portal opens up again. There's going to be more movement in college football. We know that that's part of what happens here. You know, he certainly sounds committed. Brian talked to him before the Pinstripe Bowl. After the Pinstripe Bowl, he sounded committed, but it's a different situation now.
Yeah, I think I can't imagine from his perspective wanting to be a backup quarterback after all the experience and plays that he's been through. I would have a hard time believing he'd be content sitting behind another player, which would make me believe that if he were to lose the job in spring ball or have an opportunity to transfer after that, maybe that's possible. So I don't know. I have to see it. You have to evaluate who's ahead in the competition, but I don't foresee either one of them wanting to really accept a backup role at this point in their careers.
And where is he going to go? That's the other part of it, I guess. Yeah. That's a big question. All right.
Well, wait, hold on. Just to remove the fantasy here. They're not going to name a starting quarterback until August 31st against Howard, right? Like,
no, they're not going to name a starting quarterback until he trots out in the field. Yeah, for that game. Forget even before that game. Yeah,
it's yes. Gonna be- and I mean that in like a tactical sense, right? Like, even if someone clearly wins the job in the spring, why would you announce the decision before that, right, when you give the kid a chance to leave, right?
But they'll know if someone's head and shoulders better. It will be. They don't have to announce it. I mean,
I think that the coaching staff could protect itself by not officially naming anybody internally until after the April 30th window closes or whatever. And I think that's what they're going to do, because that's what every program does. Ohio State did that, I'm pretty sure, with Kyle McCord and Devin Brown. Like, you don't want to hurt yourself. And as much as that stinks for an individual player, I think, right? But I think that's the right thing to do for the program. So I would be shocked, like absolutely shocked, if we know who the starting quarterback is for Rutgers before the first snap of the Howard game.
All right. What does this mean for the portal from here? Obviously, I saw they lost a big target to Syracuse. Whoa.
Who?
Defensive lineman.
Who are we talking about? With a team that doesn't matter and isn't going to make an impact, took a player that Rutgers wanted? What? Fran Brown? What? Oh, who would have thought this was possible? All right. I'm done.
You're done? You sure? Okay. But I mean, what else is coming? Do we have any ideas, any names? Any positions, tight end you mentioned before, that's certainly got to be one. What else?
Players can start visiting campus beginning tomorrow, Wednesday, January 3rd. That's when the dead period ends. They are expected to have visitors, at least one visitor, and there are multiple positions they have to target. Defensive tackle is the glaring one. They've been fighting for a lot of guys. They lost a guy to Illinois. They lost a guy to Syracuse, as we just mentioned. So that's the big area. You're losing Isaiah Eiton. You're losing Mayan Honitu. And while you have guys like Keontae Hamilton and Zaire Angoy, who you probably feel good about, you want an experienced, proven guy to fill in kind of the way that Eiton did, the way Ifeanyi Maijay did. That's really, I think, to me, that's the biggest target they're at after right now.
And then is it then tight end and offensive line? I have to imagine that's the line still a target.
Yeah, I would think so. While they bring back enough guys, clearly they're losing Curtis Dunlap at guard. He was a very experienced starter. And while the core is still there on the offensive line, you certainly want to target maybe one or two more players. No question. So I think offensive line's a good one, and tight end is certainly the big question mark for sure too. Although there are some young developmental players that could use an opportunity to step up. I mean, Mike Higgins is one. Victor Konopka is another. So, yeah, I think tight end, offensive line, defensive tackle are the three priorities. But Rutgers is probably a little bit better off on the offensive line and a tight end than defensive tackle at this point.
In the other direction, it seems like we got through the portal without losing anybody, or without them really getting a big name or people that we were surprised to see leave.
Any edge case that could have gone either way stayed at Rutgers. I think it's a huge victory. The portal closed. They made it out pretty much unscathed. I think they can breathe a sigh of relief until the April window, which is really reserved for kids who see the writing on the wall in spring camp and say, I'm going to go try to play somewhere else. So I think they're in great shape in the portal, as long as they can add, again, defensive tackle, offensive lineman. I think tight end is a huge need because, yes, they have those young guys, but they've played a combined 30 snaps last year at tight end, something to that effect. Like, Victor Konopka is going to be on his fourth or fifth year. I just think that experiment is done. I think Mike Higgins has a long way to go. Logan Blake, the true freshman from this year, who barely played or didn't play, I don't think, has a long way to go. You need a guy to replace Johnny Langan and Sean Bowman and, frankly, play better than they did last year. So I would think, and that's a hard position in the portal to target. There are only so many good tight ends out there. But I do think that if I'm Rutgers, defensive tackle is priority number one, tight end is priority number two, and a second wide receiver to join Dimier Miller is probably priority number three.
All right, good stuff. Let's do true or false, because there's some basketball topics in here, and it'll be a good jumping off point to talk some hoops, because, I mean, holy cow, Big Ten conference play. This is basketball season, folks, sort of. We need to talk about that, so let's do it. All right, this is true or false. We've already addressed, but let's do it anyway. True or false, Gavin Wimsett will be on the roster for the 2024 season. What's your prediction on that one, Pat? True or false?
I think true. Definitely at this point. Yeah.
Pat, I'm sorry, Brian.
I think true. I do like thinking about this now. A quarterback in the portal in April is pretty valuable. So maybe if the writing is on the wall, but I just think that they've done a good enough job communicating with him. And I think the race will be close enough in the spring that he wants to give it a shot in training camp. So true.
Yeah. I'm going to go true as well. He's a confident kid. And they have, from everything I've understood, they've explained this to him, and they're not wrong that they need competition here, and that he did not have a year that would be that you would not expect to have someone else pressing him for the job. So I agree, he'll be on the roster, or at least January 2nd. That's my opinion. All right, true or false? Expect at least two more big portal additions. Pat, do you think they're going to get someone before the season that's going to make an impact?
Yeah, I do. And I think the last couple of seasons, they've added some nice pieces later than we expected too. So I think they'll follow that trend, at least fill some needs. Not saying that they'll be flashy names, but they'll be serviceable veteran players that have experience.
Brian, you agree?
Completely agree with Pat. True. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. True. Although I tell you, I'm getting a little bit more. Anybody who doubted the reporting in Sarge's NIL story should rethink that perspective. I'm just getting a little bit more. Every time I see someone who they want go someplace before they even get a shot at them, it makes you think that maybe not. But for now, I'm going to say true. All right. True or false? Rutgers should be rooting for Washington in the Natty. Pat? True or false?
Phrase because Michigan is full of cheaters.
Whatever you want, you can make it anything you want. That's the good part about this.
I feel because they're playing them next year. Sure, absolutely, yeah. They should be rooting for Washington. Although either way, you're getting a Big Ten winner. So,
Brian, do they care?
It depends what you want. If you want to say the defending national champion is coming to Piscataway next year, you want Washington to win. If you want to have a screenshot where you could post Rutgers 7, national champion Michigan 0, and have that as your Twitter banner or whatever, then you want Michigan to win. I think either way, there's a way to positively spin it for Rutgers. And I personally am so excited for this game. Yesterday's games were awesome. We're getting some new blood in the championship. Washington hasn't won it since the 90s. Michigan hasn't won it since the 90s. Thank goodness Alabama's not going to win it. And we got a new fresh face and a long-suffering fan base that finally gets to enjoy a new national champion.
Yeah, I agree totally. It was a lot of fun. And watching it from the perspective of watching Michael Penix Jr., who I voted for the Heisman. Thank you, America. He was the best player in college football. He looked really good. And just watching some of those passes, those long passes, the beautiful ball he throws, just the way that he changed that team. And I get granted, he's not going to be here next year when they come to Piscataway. I get it. But there's still a lot of talent on the team. The idea that I get it. It's not Ohio State, and it's a different opponent, but it's still their toughest game on the schedule next year, I think. All right, let's do some basketball. True or false? The Big Ten will get less than 8 teams in the NCAA tournament. Pat, what do you think?
Wow. Yeah. Just based on the way things have looked, it's not looking good for the Big Ten. So I think true. I think it's under.
Brian?
I'm with you. True.
Yeah, it looks that way, doesn't it? Man, it's not good. Yeah. it's hard to come up with. It's hard to come up with eight, certainly seven, maybe. All right. True or false? The Big Ten. Rutgers will win less than eight Big Ten games. Pat, is Rutgers going to win less than eight Big Ten games? Seven and 13, 6-14.
Yikes.
Yikes.
Considering we've gotten through this long without talking about the Stone Hill near disaster, I mean, my goodness. Maybe this is a bit reactionary, but Brian sent me this earlier. Andy Katz has Rutgers predicted to be last in the Big Ten standings. So if you lost Andy Katz, you lost me too. So I'm going to say we'll win less than eight games.
Brian?
It's such a low number, but I think true, right? Like I just don't see the path to winning. Like the Big Ten is not great, but a majority of the teams are good, right? Like, are there any teams that are automatic wins? And even if we're going to start, if we start getting to that conversation, obviously the automatic win of last year was the reason Rutgers didn't make it into the tournament, right? So
yeah.
I don't know if there are any automatic wins in the Big Ten, but I just don't. And I'm trying not to, again, to Pat's point, not trying to have recency bias here. I think Rutgers is not as bad as they looked against Stonehill. That was one of the worst performances they've had maybe the century. It was, they frankly deserved to lose that game, and they should feel very fortunate they didn't. I just don't see, eight wins on the schedule. I don't. So I will say they will not win eight games.
Right now I'm with you. And it just doesn't look like a team that's ready for the Big Ten. Certainly. Let me tell my funny Stonehill story. So it's Saturday. I got a day off. I'm doing the crossword puzzle. Forgot that they were playing. You know, you see Stonehill on the schedule. I couldn't tell you where Stonehill was from. Like I knew nothing about Stonehill. I get a buzz in my pocket. I look at my phone. It's just an email. And all the email says is this is a disaster. That's the entire text of the email. No context, no subject line. Just this is a disaster. And I'm like, uh-oh, Rutgers Stonehill. Go to the television, 3 minutes left. So I didn't see the entire game, Brian. I certainly filled in pretty quickly what happened. I mean, what was the Big Ten? Was it just it's simple as bad shooting? Were they just not ready energy wise? I mean, what was the problem?
Look, everyone points to energy when something like this happens, and I think it's fair. I'm not going to judge the effort level of the players because I don't know. Like, that's not for me to stand here. But what I could tell you is this: the same issues that have been recurring every game, almost every game this season, came coming back. They were getting destroyed on the boards early. Stonehill was like one of the 50 worst offensive rebounding teams in the country, and they were missing two starters, and they just became a Division I team last year, and they rebounded 10 of their first 16 misses.
Jeez.
Rutgers is a bottom 60 team shooting on twos, on threes, on effective field goal percentage. They're not a great free throw shooting team. They can't score, and they don't rebound well enough defensively, so they give opponents a lot of second chance opportunities. And they don't defend as well as a vintage Rutgers Steve Peichel team does. So you combine all of those things, and you're susceptible to a night like that. People got a little excited about the Seton Hall game because they shot 12 of 24 on threes, but that was clearly an exception to the rule. This is not a good shooting team. Andre Hyatt is the only guy that's shooting, I believe, better than 31% on threes on this roster. That's it. Gavin Griffiths, your star freshman, who's supposed to come in with this reputation as a shooter, is shooting something like 20%. That's not entirely his fault. There's no offense being run to give him open looks and to help him out. It's just all the offseason issues, the way this roster was constructed, it was clearly there's clearly flawed. And now that's kind of just coming out in these results. And I don't know. I don't know if there's a solution here is my point. I just don't know if this is kind of what they are.
Yeah. It feels like this is all from the spring. Right. And it comes back to what happened, losing Paul Mulcahy, losing Cam Spencer, being ill prepared to pay those guys. Essentially, I think that's what it came down to. They were easy to pluck off the roster, and people in the Rutgers universe kind of was dismissive about it. Like, oh, well, we'll replace those guys. And they convinced themselves because of, optimistic practice reports that they'd be better offensively, they'd be more up tempo, all the stuff that was just nonsense. They took two really good Big Ten quality starters and did not replace them. I don't know if they have a Big Ten starting backcourt. I mean, someone said to me like, well, you can't really look at the Stonehill up because they didn't have Jamichael Davis. I mean, we got to a point already where like 10, 12 games into his career, we're counting on Jamichael Davis. Like, I don't think anybody in their right mind thought he was going to be an important player heading into this year. It just speaks a lot to the way this team's constructed. And I come back to it. I hope the team proves me wrong and shows to me that it does have a Big Ten caliber backcourt. But right now, I don't feel that way. And it's just a lesson that I hope Steve Peichel, I hope the Rutgers community learned about protecting your assets from a basketball standpoint, Pat. I don't know. I mean, am I overreacting to, is that too much, you think?
I think you're 100% right about the backcourt. What about the frontcourt, man? Like, Cliff Amori was supposed to be your ace, and
yeah,
he's just really been flat and a little bit of a disappointment. So I think you added it all up. Brian talked about the issues. You've certainly brought up a great point about the guards, and it's just a little bit of, right, a problem is something that exists over and over again. And Brian did a great job highlighting all that. So I don't think you're overreacting. I think you're spot on. This is just, you know, a problem that it just keeps happening. So a lot of repetition there.
So just the Jamichael Davis thing, because I've heard the same thing. Have people looked at his stats? Have people you'd think Jamichael Davis was like Cade Cunningham in 2021. Like, he's not even one of the better freshmen he's one of the worst offensive freshmen in the Big Ten. Like, what do they think he's going to do? Jamichael Davis is not, there's always some mythical savior out there. You know, like, this isn't the same situation as Mawat Mag last year, who clearly made a humongous impact on that team, right? This is Jamichael Davis is an under the radar 3-star kid who is in no world should he be seen as the savior of the program. I'm not sure if Jamichael Davis played that they'd be any better against Stonehill. I think it's totally unfair to put that on Jamichael Davis, because whenever he does come back from injury, people shouldn't expect him to be a guy that's going to be scoring 15 points a game, because that's not where he is. He's not ready to do that.
So what has to happen for them to win these games? I mean, Iowa's no good. Ohio State's got a good backcourt. I think I would expect them to win that game. Iowa, more of a borderline possibility. It's a tough place to win on the road. I mean, what has to happen in these next two? Is it as simple as Derek Simpson finding his game? Is it Andre Hyatt shooting the lights out? I mean, what's the formula for this team?
Experience the Heldrich Hotel, a luxury hotel that's perfect for both the business and leisure traveler. Ideally located within minutes of Rutgers University, the Heldrich is convenient to all the action and activities at SHI Stadium, Jersey Mike's Arena, and the Rutgers University campus. The moment you walk through the doors of the Heldrich Hotel and Conference Center, you know you're someplace different. A place with an independent spirit and a boutique vibe. A place where you can immerse yourself in your meeting or event as easily as you can the local culture. Located in the heart of the city, the Heldrich lets you experience all that New Brunswick has to offer. Whether you're coming to New Brunswick for a fun weekend with friends, in town for a Scarlet Knights game, or attending a business meeting, book your accommodations today at theheldrich.com.
Wormula is hoping that the Big Ten refs remember the game in Columbus last year and how they robbed Rutgers of a win and try to make up for it by calling every ticky-tack foul and fouling out three Ohio State players at the under-16 timeout and giving Rutgers 70 free throws. That's, to me, the most realistic path. Or hoping that you find your three-point shooting stroke like you had against Seton Hall and you knock down some threes. You have to hope that everyone plays above their level and things kind of work out. But Rutgers has never won at Ohio State.
Rutgers, is that right? Never?
They have never won at Ohio State. And I don't want to hear this nonsense of anyone trying to say they won last year. They didn't. I don't care that it was, you know, even the Big Ten admitted that the call was wrong, but they didn't win. Okay, let's stop this nonsense. Rutgers did not win at Ohio State, and Rutgers did not play in the 2019-2020 NCAA tournament because it didn't happen. Just want to get out in front of those takes. Okay, I hate when people say that stuff. It bothers the heck out of me. So I just want to get some
mid-season form here. We're just starting.
It kills me. I already hear people talking about, oh, we won at Ohio State last year. No, they did not. Okay, I empathize. I feel bad. They should have won if the Big Ten refs did not screw them. Totally agreed, but they did not win. Anyway,
this is Fonzie Forum speaking, right?
This is practically Pele versus what's his face, the other guy that Fonzie thinks is better at soccer. I can never come up with his name. Anyway, yeah, no, this is good. This is fiery stuff. Yeah.
Did you guys watch that Ohio State West Virginia basketball game a couple of days ago? It was crazy. Like, Ohio State just had to make a couple of free throws in overtime to win it and just missed every single one, let West Virginia back in the game. It was crazy. But I wasn't that impressed. I think it's a perfect opportunity for Rutgers, really. We'll see. We'll see.
I haven't been impressed yet. I have not seen a single Big Ten team that I've been impressed with. I mean, maybe Illinois, but then Illinois lost the best player now on a rape charge, which is just an absolute disaster in itself. We don't need to talk about that. It's not a Rutgers problem, fortunately. So yeah, I mean, there's only three ranked teams. Purdue. Of course, they're the other than Purdue. Can you give me one team that you're like, you know, this is a Final Four potential team? I can't.
I thought you were going to forget about Purdue. I really was. I was like, this guy.
No, I thought I just assumed you. The number one in the country.
Everyone talks down on Purdue. I wasn't sure if you were joining the Zach. No. He's just good because he's tall crowd.
I think they are the favorites, probably the favorites to win. Well, one of the five teams that are favorite to win the national championship. Absolutely.
Yeah. Other than them, they're clearly on a level of their own in the Big Ten. Illinois was close before Terrence Shannon was charged with a despicable crime, obviously. And everyone else is kind of middling. The thing is, though, like there's no – There are maybe two or three bad teams, but everyone else is kind of middling. Like it's typical Big Ten where you have a bunch of teams that are going to be good at home. Wisconsin's okay, you know, like
Wisconsin's okay. The bad teams, Michigan, 6-7. I mean, without looking at the schedule, that's still bad. Penn State, bad. Maryland kind of rebounded there. They have a nice win, 8-0 at home. They're bad. Bad. Okay,
they're going to get demolished by Purdue tonight.
Is Iowa bad?
Iowa's not as good as usual.
Michigan State's not bad. They're 0-2 in the conference. They're bad though.
Michigan State
straight. Yeah,
Michigan State. People are talking about whether they'll make the tournament or not.
Right, but are they a bad team? We didn't say they're bad. Bad's different than off to a slow start.
Bad by Michigan State standards.
Okay, all right. So that you just rattle off six or seven bad teams. Minnesota, we didn't mention Minnesota. They're not good, right?
Right, but again, what we need to account for here is that Rutgers is one of those bad teams
at the moment. Yes, and for Andy Katz, I mean, I saw that, like, I was like, whoa, that's bad news. When Andy, and he, if you didn't see this on Twitter, he was ranking the 14 teams in the Big Ten. Had Rutgers rock bottom. The man who was driving the bus just last year.
Yeah, it's a stunner. It's a stunner. That's all I can say.
Pat Lanny's good friend, Andy Katz. What do you make of that? Wow.
Yeah, it was startling. It was startling. Just shows you all the media hype, right? Just shows you those in the media, they giveth and they taketh away.
All right, before we move on to questions, we need to mention the fact that the biggest moment at the rack might be Friday night when Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes come to Piscataway, sold out crowd. I hear the media credentialing situation is rough. We'll have three people there to cover it. And yeah, I mean, if you watch even a little bit of sports, forget women's sports, watch any sports, you just know that she is an incredible player. Her matchup, you know, in the Final Four last year was just a phenomenal moment against LSU for the sport. It'll be fun to watch. You know, I know this is not a great Rutgers team, but it seems like she has yet to fail to put on a show in any of her games.
She's a high octane scorer, performer. You watch her workout videos, they're inspiring. Like she's all in. Like she's a fantastic story. You know, you think about like young girls idolizing women's soccer players and the U.S. women's national team. It's almost become that phenomena of Caitlin Clark as well. Young girls want to be like Caitlin Clark. And sure. I think there's going to be a lot of that on Friday night.
She's an Alex Morgan kind of Carly Lloyd, Mia Hamm kind of figure.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's really interesting. I'm excited to be there too. It should be. So I came up with like two ideas I wanted to do leading up to this game. One was like the best basketball players that have ever played against Rutgers at the rack. The other one was like looking back at all the sellouts for women's basketball at the rack. And it took all about 10 minutes of research to find out every single one is University of Connecticut. So it's a little bit of a spoiler, but yeah, it should be another interesting night for women's basketball for sure.
All right. Well, we certainly will recap that next week. Looking forward to being there. I will be there as well. Yeah. I mean, she's just fun to watch. And, you know, I hope that the rack has the same kind of atmosphere it does for, for some of the bigger men's games. And I remember it was, I mean, that was fun those days. I was at some of those, sellouts when Rutgers was playing UConn. And it was, you know, when CVIV had it going and Cappy Pondexter was playing. And, you know, it was like a real rivalry between her team and Gino's team. This is before Gino pulled to the next level and Rutgers slipped back many notches, but it was fun. Yeah. And it was an event when those two teams played. So hopefully we'll have something that will resemble that level of excitement. All right, let's do some insider questions. I got a bunch of them, most of them related to Kaliak Mania here. All right. So I'm interested in the why from Ethan Kaligmanis' perspective. Why did he want out of Minnesota? Was he seeking more NIL money, or he wanted the back from Kirk? Something else? And this is a good point of it too. And it's we don't have the answer, but it's an interesting discussion. Also, what do we know about what he'll be getting in NIL? And is it more or less than Gavin's deal? And the follow-up question, if Gavin's no longer the starter, do the NIL contracts change? This is great stuff. We don't know the answer, but it is fascinating. I mean, certainly we have to imagine that there was some level where, you know, as a starting quarterback in the Big Ten, Gavin Wimsett was making a fair amount on NIL, probably more than most players in the team, if not more than all the players in the team. What happens if he's the backup? I have no idea. We have not heard any indication that that's why he's coming here. You guys have any insight into this at all? Or are we just kind of talking out of our you-know-whats?
So there's a report from, I believe, the Pioneer Press that said PJ Fleck, in a meeting with his quarterbacks after the season, would not guarantee Kaligmanis was going to retain the starting job. There would be competition. So I have to imagine that part of that, and his father on Twitter denied the fact that a mythical transfer portal quarterback was the reason they decided to cut ties with the program. But I do think the fact that his spot was not guaranteed was part of the calculus, and then wanting to reunite with the offensive coordinator that he had most success under was a big part of that. I am talking out of my you-know-what. I don't know much about this, but I reckon that, A, most contracts are year-by-year basis. I don't think Gavin Wimsett signed a lifetime contract with any of the NIL people that are sponsoring him. And two, I don't think Ethan Kaligmanis came to Rutgers for more NIL money than he was making at Minnesota or anything like that, right? Like, we've discussed ad nauseum how Rutgers does not have the money to compete for top-tier quarterbacks in the portal for NIL. I don't think, one, Kaligmanis demands that much money in the first place. And I do think that other factors are more important to him than NIL money. Speaking out of, again, my you-know-what, I could be completely wrong, but that is my sense of the situation.
I would generally agree with you there. It seemed like he's seeking a rebirth of his career, a new opportunity, wants to go somewhere where he feels welcomed and familiar with the play caller. I think this was more of a recruiting aspect than an NIL aspect and a kid thinking about what's best for him, not necessarily what's best for his pocket.
A lot of questions about his talent level. Is it me, or are they just bringing in a transfer quarterback who is as average as Gavin statistically? There's competition, but what am I missing here? Let's assume that he is average. Isn't that a huge improvement? Just a lot of questions about whether or not we covered some of this here, but I guess what does he have to do for this to be a step up that makes a major difference in your mind?
He needs to be average. That sounds about right to me. If average quarterback play for Rutgers might have helped them win against Wisconsin, would have given them a better shot against Ohio State. I think, like, not being the least accurate quarterback in college football would be a major step forward. And I think he could deliver that. But again, you don't know until obviously you're in it.
This is a fun one. Who has better gyros? Gyros? How are we pronouncing it? What's the correct Mr. has a Greek accent when he says the player's name? What's the correct pronunciation here?
I'm pretty sure it's Hilo. Like
Hilo?
Hilo.
Hilo? Well, Hilo.
I'm not Greek. I don't know. I don't think it's gyro. I think that's wrong.
It's not gyro. Gyro. Gyro.
Hilo. Hilo. Gyro.
Okay. Who has the better gyros, Mr. C or Sunrise? You have to be a RU student from the late 80s, early 90s to appreciate that Greek question. Ask it on the podcast, and I guarantee you'll get a lot of great reaction. I do not know the answer. I don't think, Pat, were either of these places open when you were on campus?
No.
No?
No, I don't know.
Do they have gyros? Is it like a gyro at the trucks, like a fat gyro? Do they do that? They should do it.
I don't think so.
So many NIL opportunities here that they're missing. Yeah, no, I don't. But, all right. Well, if you have an answer, please text us back and we'll come back and come up with the answer if enough people submit to that question. All right. A few more. Too early to handicap the 2024 schedule. While there's no Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State, as of now, I see only four games when they would be favored. Well, as always, thanks and happy new year. Four, I'm assuming you're talking about the Big Ten slate. I think there'd be more than four. I mean, Akron, Howard, certainly. You can make a case for Virginia Tech, although on the road, that's going to be tough. Be certainly Hickam or close to it. Yeah, I mean, what do you think? Is the Big Ten schedule? I mean, I wrote at the Pinstripe Bowl, the teams on the schedule for Rutgers did really well in the bowl season.
Yeah, I think sounds about right. If you're talking about the Big Ten schedule, I think four is like a really good goal, right? That would get you to, like, say you swept the non-conference, you know, four, you're improving on this year. I think that's a pretty good way to look at it. You know, it's amazing when we looked at the schedule when it first came out and how our jaws dropped at the level of competition. It's seemingly gotten better throughout the season and the way these teams ended. Certainly, USC had a different element at the end of the year, even without Caleb Williams. Washington's still going to be amazing. Obviously, they retained all their players for this amazing run. It'll be really interesting to see how they retain talent for next year too. It's going to be incredible. So yeah, I think that's a good number. I think that's a pretty spot on assessment.
It could be favored, if not favored. Certainly the four easiest games, as I see it, are the last four. I mean, Minnesota, Maryland, Illinois, and then Michigan State. So, I mean, there's certainly, you would think Michigan State would be improved. Maryland has curb stomped them the last couple of years.
Maryland was the surprise bowl winner, like the surprise champ bowl season too. The way they came out and play without Talia was incredible. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. Minnesota will be better. I mean, yeah, Illinois did not make a bowl. So you'd think a home game against Illinois, that would be the most certain a Big Ten win. Brian, what do you think?
I think it's way too early to tell anything. And I think using bowl results to project anything into the fall is fool's gold or fool's errand or however you say that. I'm full of messed up metaphors today, but I think it's too early. I think like some games that might seem easy, like Nebraska is a perennial loser of one score games. Playing them on the road isn't going to be easy. UCLA is in a tough spot with Chip Kelly on the hottest hot seat possible, but you know, are you going to be able to beat them at home? Like USC doesn't look as good after they had a tough year, but they're USC, they're full of talent. You're going cross country. Michigan State seems like a pretty simple team. They're going to have a five-star quarterback and probably a lot better players through the portal with their first-year coach and a better coaching staff, right? So I don't know. I think the only W's I would pencil in right now are Akron and Howard. Everything else got Rutgers went probably like undefeated in 50-50 games this year, right? There was no 50-50 game they lost from what I can remember.
Iowa was a... At the kickoff, Iowa was a, what is it? What was the line of that game? 2 points? Get it. You would say that it's not a 50-50 game, but certainly Vegas thought it was.
I would not list that as 50-50. And Maryland...
What was the line of the Maryland game?
No, that's probably a fair call. Mm-hmm. But everything else, like Rutgers won most games they had a chance to, but wasn't certain. Are we sure they can do that 2 years in a row? Like at some point, the ball is going to bounce the wrong way. We'll see. But I do think they have a chance of, you know, I think you have a chance of going 7-5, 8-4 if everything breaks well. This year, that was probably too much to ask for. So,
yeah, I'm not looking at this schedule next year like I do most years, though, and say, oh, there's four losses. Let's look at the other eight games and see where they can get six wins. I mean, I do think that's a little bit of difference. And I get it. Yeah. Washington. All right. If you want to say Washington is your new Penn State or Michigan on the schedule, that's fine. But I certainly don't think UCLA or USC are by any stretch of the imagination at the same level as the teams that they played, or for that matter, if it was Oregon, you know, I don't think it's at the same level as the teams they played in the past. The final four games. Yeah. I'm sure Michigan State's going to be better, but they were not good. Maryland's, gosh, I don't know. I mean,
is raised. That's the moral of the story.
The floor is raised. Exactly. Very true. All right, moving on. See if we have got anything else here we want to talk about. How much can coaches give to NIL? Dave from Basking Ridge asks. I like giving you guys questions that I'm almost certain we don't know the answer to, but it's a good one. I mean, if Greg Schiano had got a new $6 million contract, could he donate $1 million of it to the collective? Is that allowed?
Not a dime. Not a dime. As Jim Calhoun said, not a dime back. If you could, Nick Saban would take $9 million of his $10 million and buy his entire roster. Not this a dime true. Back.
Yeah, that's fair. Good point.
At that point, wouldn't the schools just pay the players instead of the coaches?
Well, that's where we're headed. Yeah. I mean, of course.
I'm just saying that seems like a much more logical conclusion than giving the money to the coach and then asking the coach to pay the players. Just pay the players.
Could the coach donate it to a charity, like to write a check to a charity, like, if John Newman suddenly had a UNICEF box and I'm going to give $1 million to this nice man who can then give it. I mean, why not? You could probably get around it, right?
You mean how SEC schools used to give $500,000 to the local church of a random recruit?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. It's all cheating. I'm just having fun here. Good question, though. Yeah. All right. I think that covers most of the questions we have. There were, again, like I said, so many questions, but they're all very similar about the new quarterback. And look, hey, we've got, it's still 8 months to figure this out. We got to get him on campus. We got to see spring practice. I mean, there's a lot of intrigue about this team, but I mean, I think as we've talked about a million times, it is a good thing to have competition in this program and Rutgers needed. That's the situation we're in now.
Big picture question. I'm not sure we've talked about. Do you guys think Rutgers is in a better position today than it was yesterday at the quarterback position?
Of course. Absolutely.
Yeah, without question.
No question. How would you answer that? No. Could you answer that? No.
They got exactly what they needed. They needed competition, and that's exactly what they got. They weren't going out and getting the guy from Oregon State or whatever. I think this was exactly what Rutgers needed. It's a perfect situation. Definitely better today than yesterday. No question. Yeah.
Once you assume they couldn't Kyle McCord it or couldn't go out and pay whatever the going prices for a top level portal quarterback, then yes, I think this was the best case scenario. Absolutely.
I agree. I just wanted to bring it up to make sure, because we talked a lot about is he that much better than Gavin? But I wanted to make clear that we think that yes, they are in a better spot now. And I agree with Pat. This is, of all they could realistically done, this is the best case scenario. I agree.
All right. What else we got, Pat? We got some wrestling?
Wrestling Ryder? Heating up.
Rider rivalry?
Dylan Shaver was a silver medalist at the Midlands, lost in the final. But it was a very nice showing for him. Rutgers took a limited team out there, so they could only enter six guys in the tournament. They picked some guys that needed some reps and things like that. So one of the highlights was Shaver getting that second place, no question. And then this weekend, things start to get busy. We're in the new year, and then the Big Tens are a week away. The Big Ten duels are a week away. So we start off this weekend with Penn. That's a top 25 matchup, and then a rivalry match against Rider on Sunday. So if you're looking for some dual action, the Penn match is in Philadelphia, but the Rider match is at home. So things are about to get busy and fun and interesting. There are some really good matches on the schedule, so we'll be covering it.
Are they going to win both those?
Yeah, they should win both. Penn will be close. Rider won't be as close, but Rutgers should definitely be favored in both.
What's the wrestling record going to be in the Big Ten this year? Dante ahead.
I think it's 500, which yeah, sounds terrible.
Be an achievement, terrible. Right? That'd be good.
Sounds terrible, but that's very competitive considering you're wrestling five of the best teams in the country. So, right. I think 500 would be a really good record for them.
Excellent. All right.
Bo Melton. Yeah. I don't know if you guys watched. I didn't watch the game.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. That was a great day for Rutgers NFL players. Wow.
Yeah, Gus Edwards is, I think, top three in rushing touchdowns in the league. Isaiah Pacheco went viral for his running style again. People said he looked like he's a kid trying new shoes on at the store. Someone else said every time he runs, he looks like he's in a cartoon. And I think those are all both very appropriate ways of describing the very unique unorthodox style he runs in. And then Bo Melton gets his first career NFL touchdown. He signs with the Green Bay Packers active roster. Very cool. Very cool weekend for Rutgers. Big day for Rutgers, as Bill Belichick likes to say. And, maybe they get another guy in the NFL, Max Melton, in a couple months in the NFL draft. Things look pretty good for the Knights in the NFL.
I had Gus Edwards on my fantasy team, left him on the bench in the championship game, and lost to Sarge by 50 points. So congratulations, Sarge, on the fantasy championship I hate you. Okay. On that happy note, let's sign off, and we'll be back early next week. And hopefully we're not talking about a last place basketball team in the Big Ten. And we have some something to look forward to for the rest of the month. But until then, thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Rutgers Rant. To participate in the conversation and receive live updates about the Scarlet Knights directly to your phone, sign up at nj.com/insider.